Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri, inviting you to discover what research, projects and events are taking place at the University of Malta. This is the third and final interview in this mini-series to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the Department of Translation, Terminology and Interpreting Studies here at the University. On this occasion, I have with me Professor Charles Briffer and Professor Anthony Aquilina. I'd like to say just a few words about them before we begin our chat. Professor Briffer started his teaching career at Stella Maris College, and then after teaching in various other institutions, he came to the university as Principal Subject Area Officer Arts with the MATSEC Support Unit. He studied at the University of Malta and at Oklahoma State University. He obtained his BA Honours and MA in English, a postgraduate diploma in the teaching of Arabic, and his PhD in Maltese. Professor Anthony Aquilina is actually Chevalier, Professor Anthony Aquilina. He is Associate Professor within the Department of Translation, Terminology and Interpreting Studies, the Faculty of Arts at the University. He graduated BA Honours at the University of London and holds Masters and Doctorate degrees from the University of Poitiers in France. Welcome to you both. As we've heard from your bios, and I like to talk about my guests because I think it's important that the listeners should know what your background is, where you're coming from, your many years of study, because I think it's important that that comes across. It's interesting to note that you've come from slightly different linguistic backgrounds. Professor Briffer's emphasis is English, Arabic and Maltese, whereas Professor Aquilina has had his focus mainly on English, Maltese and French. However, both of you have found your way, or ITER has taken you to the Department of Translation, Terminology and Interpreting Studies. Perhaps it would be interesting to ask you both how that ITER has been, and on your arrival in this new department 10 years ago, what you have brought to the department, and also perhaps what the department has done for you. Professor Briffer.
It's part of our life history, you're asking. Well, translation has always been something that I enjoyed since the days when I was a student. I remember that the first thing that I wanted to translate was Macbeth. I was really, when I was doing my A level, I was really fascinated by the way the language was expressing the evil of the character, and I wanted to translate that, and I still have some pieces translated, but I never translated the whole thing, and now I don't have to do that because we already have two translations in Maltese of Macbeth. Anyhow, eventually, I started doing technical translations with Globe Capital, the Department of Health, the medical school. But honestly, I did those for the money rather than for the translation. What I really enjoy is the literary translation. The first major enterprise in translation was translating The Power and the Glory, and in order to do that I read all Graham Greene's novels in order to concentrate on this particular novel, and eventually I translated that. There were socio-historical connections because I always saw translation in conjunction with the history that was related to the translator at the moment of translation. So when I was translating The Power and the Glory, where you have the lieutenant going after the priest to eradicate, it was the time when the socialist government was fighting against church schools. So that gave me a meaning for the translation, you know, symbolically. Well, eventually I enjoyed reading, and I continued with other works. I even translated some of Enid Blyton's works.
Yes, I've seen those on the shelves. I must say, I'm sure they're very popular.
Yeah. And so when the Department of Translation was created, thanks to Zhou and Yeo, I thought, now this is the place where I want to be, because translation is really something that I like. And I entered the department with a lot of experience. I guess I had the two major languages that I needed, English and Maltese, and so we could, you know, we could carry on within the department. Now, in the past 10 years, the department actually confirmed my love for translation. And the more I stay in this department, the more I lecture on translation, the more I realize that I am in love with translation. Imagine what it means to be able to take your idea and try to give it a different shape. It's something which fascinates me, because by taking your idea and give it a different shape, I am actually entering into your mind style, into your mental disposition, and understanding you first, and then I interpret it in my own way, which is something of a skill that requires dedication, and I'm actually thinking of the word vocation. Translation, that's how I see it.
Yes, it's such a profound thing, that, isn't it? That's something that I have discovered through these interviews and doing a bit of reading for the interviews as well. The deep knowledge, as you say, that you need to have of the other person, the writer.
Yes, and with that, of course, there is involved also a certain amount of research, because you have to have some research.
Okay. Often appreciated.
No.
Possibly not. Let me turn to you, Professor Aquilina.
My beginnings were more, I would say, prosaic. My mother would insist that I translate recipes for her from English into Maltese. She had English friends who would give her magazines, and then it was my task to translate them into recipes, that is, into our language. Then, of course, I did do quite a few translations, only to show myself that I could do it. You know, I was studying for my A-levels. There were two books, Tristi Amori by Giacosa and Albert Camus, L'Étranger, and I said, these are the sort of books I would like to know inside out. So let's, translate them. Later on, when I was in Poitiers, I stuck to Albert Camus. And knowing how much had already been done, both in terms of research, translations, you know, whatever, papers, studies, and choosing a subject like the idea of the Mediterranean, the works of Albert Camus, with that vast amount of, you know, material, I had to think of an original way to approach the subject. What will my contribution be? Something which is mine. And so I said, look, let's translate Albert Camus. At that time, I thought I would be concentrating just on the, Mediterranean, the essays, L'Été, which, by the way, has been published a few weeks ago, Nos, Nuptials in English, and various sections of the novels that speak of the Mediterranean, like the swim in La Peste, where Tharoux and Rieux actually consolidate their friendship thanks to this swim together and all that. And thanks to these translations, I ended up practically taking the whole lot, which I hope to publish now that I found a publisher who's really interested in Albert Camus and in translation as such for Farage, if I could mention this publishing house. And a student of ours, by the way, right, of the Department of Translation. Sure. That is another aspect which we should go into, because even when it comes to subtitling, we are training good subtitlers. So, later on, these are the ones who should be approached to do the job. But let's...
We can pick that up later on.
Later, if you like. So... Next month, January, there is going to be L'Envers et l'Endroit by Albert Camus in Maltese too, Sewal Maloub, and hopefully the plays, Le Juste, Caligula, Le Malentendu, L'État de Siège, and the rest. Of course, I can't say that this is what brought me to the department. Mm-hmm. Actually, Joe knew, who is also my ex-teacher of Italian. Yes, he had come to know about my translation of Guy de Maupassant, when there was the first evening course, a two-year evening course, the idea was to offer the course not just for those who want to translate from English into Maltese, but also for those who opt for French as their main language, or Italian as their main language, right? So not as a passive language, but as a main language. And he roped me in, together with Professor De Pasquale. And we did a lot of work, to make sure that the program of studies would tally with the rest, And I must admit that although I had been working with the Department of French for many, many years, since 1993, it was Joe's idea who actually this idea that brought me closer, I would say brought me up here, because junior college is at MCEDA. So yes, in spite of all my efforts within the Department of French, ironically it was this new department that actually gave me the opportunity to become a member of the University of Malta at this level.
This is one of the joys, really, of this new department, because it is a new department. I mean, there are other departments that have been around for a very, very long time, but this is new, and it's fulfilling perhaps a new need as well.
And apart from its being new, it has produced so much, because we have furnished so many translators for the EU institutions in Brussels and Luxembourg. Apart from that, in these 10 years, we had some of our students publishing their translated works or their collection of glossaries.
That's a great satisfaction. Yes,
and there's a tremendous amount of research done in these 10 years by these postgraduate students.
Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about, or pick out, I know it's an invidious task picking out one piece of research rather than another, but perhaps you could
talk about them collectively.
Exactly.
Basically, there are four types. They can either do a translation, and even here...
I think it was wise that we gave that opportunity.
Yes, of course.
Because you get people telling you, look... why don't you concentrate on
terminology
and
But not everyone is disposed towards terminology. If they pick translation, they can either translate themselves something, okay? For instance, we've had people translating Da Vinci Code, Harry Potter, Agatha Christie, Fallaci, Keats, Edgar Allan Poe, Somerset Maugham,
Matilda.
That's right. Yeah,
children's books. Yes.
So we had that type of translation, with commentaries, analysis, whatever. This could also be comparative. for a brilliant one is Victor Bonanno's Hell or Inferno, a comparative analysis of four English translations of extracts from Dante. You know, this is one type of research. Then there is the technical translation, which could be, we had the interpretation of dreams, translating Freud, for example, or translating the document Anti-Cancer, A New Way of Life. You know, they're technical.
Subjects of diverse nature.
That's right. Then there were people who went in for theoretical issues, like, for example, the psycholinguistic process and cognitive approaches in translation, translating reality. This was an excellent piece of work, translating reality.
It was published.
And it was published, yes. And even Father Peter praised it a lot when he saw it, because it was an excellent piece of work, translating reality. How do you translate roof? And if you say, I'm at barbecue for El Bait, and you say, I had a barbecue on the roof or on the rooftop, does that make sense to somebody in London? Imagine the barbecue on a rooftop in London. Mm-hmm. You know, these aspects. This is part of the way our students think and research. Translating gender issues, for example, was another issue. Anyhow, then there is, of course, terminology. And terminology, well, we've got a whole list. Motor vehicle, cinema, masonry, genetics, legal terms, music, art, sports, tools, sailing.
Neurology.
Neurology. There are so many.
Never ending. I'm going to be polemic. I'm going to be polemic here. Why should we bother to translate into Maltese certain things? I mean, I expect you to throw your arms up at that question, but I'm sure there's an answer to it.
I could say why not, and that would be
the end of it.
However, no, I'm
no, there are academic
reasons. You know, well aware that we are so used to the idea that we've been brought up using English textbooks. We have academics, I know, that they themselves don't accept the idea that they give lectures or talks or whatever in Maltese, for a good reason, between inverted commas, that they were brought up on English books, researching and also meeting peers discussing subjects in English, right, or let's say French. So this would mean for them and for us, because we are academics too, that we have to rack our brains. We have to make sure that what we're going to come up with in Maltese is actually saying the same thing. But this is the challenge. And if we work on our own, obviously, there's going to be a lacuna here, there, and so on. But, and I would say, this is what makes it a challenge, that we must pass on the message to the authorities that what other countries have been doing for centuries, we have to start doing today. If Charles works on his own, if Tony works on his own, if our, you know, linguists work on their own, it's never going to, you know, materialize where you have a terminology which is prescriptive and which is exact. And therefore, I plead here for at least consensus on a bilingual policy, where the government would take it in hand to say, look, there is money coming from the EU, there is money that that we can, you know, well, budget for, and say, let's see what other countries that are bilingual have been doing. We have Canada, a model. They've done lots of things, and they've proved that it can work. We can have not just signs in the street in both languages. We can have textbooks. We can do it. And one of the things that I wanted to show when I came out with the glossaries, you know, French, Maltese, French and German, Maltese, German, it was a team effort, is that we can actually tailor make our books to target the Maltese. And I don't know what Charles thinks about this, but I think this is the way forward, to have a bilingual policy, a good bilingual policy, right? Where associations, the academy, because even the academy has to play a part, a role, you know, in all this. It's not just a club where writers meet or simply dedicate themselves to a soiree and it implies much more.
Can I try to answer your question in a poetic way, not
yes.
the way Tony
okay.
did? Why translate into Maltese? I look at Maltese as an old language. There's no doubt about it. Professor Brincat tells us that at least we have a 1,000-year-old language. I believe it's even older. Anyhow, when you buy an old desk, which has no use anymore, you know, but you love it because it's antique, and you put it there, you appreciate it. And Maltese is an old language, and that is what made me translate Beowulf, because I wanted to see whether this old language could go back to 1500 into Northern Europe, and it did, as far as I was concerned. But I also translate, and I see translation into Maltese as having this old language, which for centuries was considered very low, okay, this old language, can it tackle modern society? And the answer is yes, of course it can. You know,
we've proved it
through your work, you're proving
yes.
Yes.
Before we end up, my experience, my little experience with your department has been the subtitling. If you could just say very quickly a few words about that, because I wouldn't like to leave that out of the discussion.
First of all, Patricia, I must thank you, because it was thanks to Evenings on Campus that we showed everyone that we can produce good quality subtitling. The original idea, of course, was to give the Maltese a French film. You don't go to the cinema in Malta and see French films, let's face it. All right,
very few
you
places
could have, exceptions, but really it's
rare,
one off. Mm-hmm. Come, and that came out so well that even the embassy, the French embassy that got to know about it, was at the time of Daniel Rondeau, when he was ambassador, that he sponsored, that he, the embassy sponsored it, and we put it up at the Europe House in, you know, Valletta, right? There, you know, it was full house, see? There was a third screening of it in, you know, Valletta, St. Christopher Street. But, of course, we learned a lot from that. And then there was the opportunity when Simon Kassar, who liked Fight Club a lot, you know, to work together and produce a better product than we had with Le Choriste. Now, that is from American English into Maltese. And we actually had this survey at the end of the screening of that film, and 99.something% actually said, and it's there in writing, that they did get something more out of the film thanks to the subtitles. You know, we had this in the sending order from without the subtitling, I would not have managed, and then going down gradually to I did not need the subtitles to understand. But believe me, over 99% said that the subtitling helped, and the majority of those said helped a lot. Of course, you have those who don't need subtitlings. But does this mean that we should ignore the vast, you know, majority who might even think that they don't need it, but in reality they do?
Well, I didn't need it, but I really enjoyed reading those Maltese subtitles. So you've got also that experience as well. You don't have to need them to actually enjoy them.
We also have the translation for Hotel Rwanda by Rosemary Masoud. We worked on it.
And Keeping Up Appearances as well.
Yes.
There are a couple of...
Something amusing.
That is television, because there is a different approach there too. You know, even the number of characters that can go into each line, the method that you use, the type, you know, it's here we're not discussing the nitty-gritty of it. But this year we're working on another one, Le Havre, right, which should also be a very good film, because the theme is, you know, migration. And the acting is also superb. So,
well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time. I knew that this was time was going to be a problem in this particular interview with two very interesting guests, Professor Charles Briffa and Professor Anthony Aquilina. Thank you both for being on University Matters today.
Thank you for listening to University Matters on Campus FM. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.